This is Talking to America. I'm your host, Aaron Zellman. Our guest today is Mark Spungen. He's the author of Neither Predator Nor Prey, a novel about a future America that many of us really don't want to have come about. Mark, welcome to Talking to America.
Thank you, Aaron. I'm glad to be here.
Mark, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about your book and why you might agree with me that a lot of Americans wouldn't want the scenario that's going to play out in your book to happen here.
The book takes place in not the very far future, and it was based on some premises. I started the book in 2005, so a few things might have changed, but not many, where there's very strict federal gun control passed, but it's a time of great economic downturn. So the feds are not doing very well financially, so they concentrate what resources they have in Wyoming, but they're gun control efforts in Wyoming don't go over real well. So they blackmail the governor with a very ugly form of blackmail to impose martial law in one of the counties, and then it goes downhill from there. And nobody that I know wants to see the scenario play out, but it's a realistic scenario.
Tell us what you mean by goes downhill.
The martial law doesn't play out very well. This is without spoiling the story for anybody. And then the feds impose the blackmail, and I'm not going to tell you what it is, but it's a very ugly form of blackmail. It's not a depressing book, and it's actually a very funny book, too. There's a lot of, even though it's a serious, depressing subject, there's a lot of humor in the book. So it's a very upbeat book.
Well, what message do you want people to take away from your book?
Well, this is a novel. If very strict gun control is passed, at least in Wyoming, it's going to be very unpleasant consequences. And we don't want to see that here in Wyoming, but we're not going to shy away from it either. So in a sense, it's a warning. All we want to do is be left alone. That's all we want. If we're left alone, the book won't play out. And if we're not left alone, then it'll become a work of prophecy rather than a work of fiction.
What percentage of gun owners do you think will agree with you?
Well, there's those that will agree and those that will actually do something about it, you know, because they say talk is cheap. So a lot of people, oh, yes, yes, this is what I would do. But when push comes to shove, the actual numbers would be very small, which in itself wouldn't be a problem because it wouldn't take very many people to, you know, to actually carry out what happens in the book.
What percentage of gun owners do you think would actually carry something out?
A fraction of a percent. You know, there's the 3% that we keep talking about, and I actually mention that figure in my book of who wouldn't comply. But there's passive compliance and there's passive non-compliance and there's active non-compliance. There are many who would just hide their gun somewhere, and then there's others would resist if they were personally attacked, and then there's the very tiny percent would take active countermeasures. Very tiny percent, probably no more than a few dozen in the state.
Well, what kind of message do you want the government to take from your book?
The message that I want them to take from our book is that all we want to do is be left alone. You know, Wyoming is still a prosperous state. We produce mineral resources. We generate electricity. We send more money to Washington. We get back. And all we ask in return is to be left alone. You know, this is a hunting state. It has a strong gun culture. We just want to be left alone. And if they don't leave us alone, they're going to find that they're going to be in over their heads. Because any law that's passed to be successful has to have a wide base of public support. And here, it would have very little public support.
What kind of support or lack of support are you getting from the county sheriffs?
Well, it depends. This is an important theme in the book, by the way. I go over that in the book about the sheriffs. And what they say and what they'll do, you know, it's hard to say. You know, some talk a good talk, but would they do the right thing? There's a few that I'm sure would, and there's others that you won't know till the time comes. Some of the sheriffs in Wyoming are very good, strong Second Amendment people, and they wouldn't cooperate.
People around the country who've read the book and they live in a different state, and what kind of feedback are you getting from those folks?
The feedback I've been getting, and I've actually sold the book in three foreign countries, though the people in Canada, Australia, and Switzerland haven't given me any feedback. But the feedback I get is that this book has given them hope. They read this book, and they say, if indeed it ever comes to the state where they can no longer have their guns, resistance would not be futile. It could be successfully accomplished.
Our tax dollars have been used over the years by the government to create what they call non-lethal force items or defense design items to take people on. In other words, they claim they can be, half a mile away and zap you with some kind of a ray gun. And the question then arises, well, what are you going to do with your M1 Garand and such?
A lot of this high tech, supposedly, that they have, I'm skeptical that they even have this stuff. You know, supposedly they have cameras that can read license plates from outer space, but they can't see 100,000 people coming across the southern border every year, or 200,000, and they can't see things coming across the Iraqi border. So I really wonder as to the quality of their technology, how much of it is hype and how much of it is real. And their technology is geared to protecting their power. You know, all of the government force is you know, their law enforcement is geared to protecting their power. And we're not challenging their power. You know, if they come to take our guns, we don't care who's in charge and who's the governor and who's the president and who's the whatever. We just want to be left alone. And their offensive power and defensive power, it isn't set up to deal with, you know, a few scattered individuals who are willing to stand up for their rights.
Okay, you mentioned if they come to take guns. Based on what you've seen in Wyoming, what else would the government have to take for people to finally join the fight, so to speak?
Well, in Wyoming, there's a lot of dissatisfaction, and it's not just guns are just one part of the equation. What these people want is total control and total power. And here we have in Wyoming, we have a large agricultural and ranching community, and the wolf introduction just isn't real popular. And we have a large outdoor people who like to hunt, who like to camp, who like to ride their vehicles. And larger areas of land are being closed off. And there's many dissatisfied people. Like I go over a lot of this in the book, like the salvage community. If you have an older car, it's really hard to get parts because the EPA closed down most of the salvage yards. And there's dissatisfaction on almost every front because all they want is more and more control, more and more power over every aspect of your life.
I wonder if you could elaborate on it a little bit. You know, you had mentioned to me about how enforcement of unpopular laws has generally been unsuccessful.
Well, sure. The classic case is, of course, your Volstead Act prohibition. You know, people, and there was actually more support for that than there would be support for firearms prohibition. But there were so many people that, no, I want to drink, that it just wasn't successful. People wouldn't inform on others, and then when it came to the jury level, many juries wouldn't convict despite the weight of the evidence. And so eventually it was such a failure that it went away. War on drugs, you know, totally non-successful. There's a certain element of people, right or wrong, use drugs, and there's enough of a market where there's enough of a supply. And there are many government law, the 55 law, you know, all it did at the end, it turned into a giant revenue-raising measure. So many people ignored it because they didn't believe in it.
You'd made a comment to me before that it's your opinion that the vast majority of the population does not care either about gun owners or gun law enforcers. And you also said that neither of these groups could expect much support from the general public. Can you elaborate on that?
Yes, I can. And that's an important theme of the book, too. Most people, in probably in excess of 90%, don't really care about much of anything. They, as long as they have a cold beer in the refrigerator, a fresh roll of toilet paper in the bathroom, and the game comes on when they turn the television on, if just about everything else doesn't matter that much. So if there ever is a struggle where say, the gun grabbers come to wherever to take guns, aside from the people who own guns that are going to keep them and the enforcers who want to take them away, the rest of the people don't care. They don't care if you get arrested and lose your house and your guns, or if the enforcers meet bad ends. They don't care one way or the other.
You mentioned in an earlier conversation about some tactical issues, and among them was careful planning, intelligent execution, and keeping your mouth shut will offer high probability of success. That sounds like something they taught me when I was in the Marine Corps. But can you elaborate on that for people?
Exactly. Most military principles are based on common sense. And this is, too. People who, for some reason, go against authority, silence is your most powerful tool. Because once you're identified, they have enough power that you're pretty well finished. So you have to remain anonymous. So, and the best way to remain anonymous is by keeping your mouth shut. Like, there's a famous saying in Wyoming about wolves. The three S's. If you're a rancher and there's wolves, they say, shoot, shovel, and shut up. And the shoot, shovel, and shut up doctrine could apply to other forms of resistance also.
Yeah, well, let's just play with that for a moment, because you're talking about remaining quiet and not being noticed, not being on the radar screen, so to speak. But what about folks who are very vocal in the defense of the Second Amendment today?
This, of course, is conjecture, you know, but there's actually, now I don't want to sound paranoid here, but there's actually some talk that if there ever was the legislation passed and they decided to have an enforcement effort, one of the first thing they would do would be have a decapitation strike, where the most vocal people would be. And they're not above planting evidence and trumping up charges and putting things on your computer. So actually, I know there are many ways of fighting the struggle, and I greatly admire people like yourself, and I'm very vocal too. But you have to realize that your vocalness carries a possible price.
Take JPFO as an example. If the federal government decided to go after a Jewish civil rights organization, they in effect would be waving a red flag, putting up billboards saying, we're going to go after everybody. Now, if that happened, do you think more people would join the fight?
Well, that's hard to say because, you know, while you picked on the topic of a Jewish gun rights organization, there are Jewish gun grabbers like Lautenberg and Feinstein and who would be the ones leading the fight. So, and they would say, you know, how can you accuse us of, you see what I mean?
I know where you're going with that, but to make a long story short, the Feinstein crowd and the Engelites and the Schumerites and the Feinsteins, I wouldn't go to the extent of saying they're very Jewish, number one, because Jewish law is very clear. It says if someone comes to kill you, arise quickly and kill that person. So they're not too Jewish in their thinking. I think one of the reasons that a lot of so-called alleged Jews are supporting gun control is because they don't know any better. And two, they want to ingratiate themselves with those who are in power. And the most notorious gun haters in America are the Kennedys and the Clintons and a host of people like that. And so I think that the Jews who are promoting gun control is just simply puppets on a string and doing the bidding for the real power behind the curtain. You made the statement here that gun owners are the best and brightest enforcers and will only be bullies and thugs. Well, what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean exactly like that. Because you go to, well, I'll give you an example. You go to a place like Camp Perry, Ohio, which is your national championships, and you go out on the line, and there's several million dollars worth of equipment laying on the line, much of it unattended, you know, and nothing ever gets taken. You talk to the people that, you know, the gun owners that you know and that you meet. These are people with who hold jobs, who have stable families, who pay their taxes, who are productive members of their community. And you look at when I said bullies and thugs, all you have to do is look at what happened up in Ruby Ridge, Idaho, and you have to look at what happened in Waco, Texas. And these are not the best and the brightest that were outside burning these places down and killing women who were nursing their babies.
Saying that at Camp Perry, there seems to be a sense of honesty amongst gun owners. Maybe that explains why a lot of gun owners don't go into politics. This is Talking to America. Our guest today is Mark Spungen. I'm your host, Aaron Zellman. And we're talking about Mark's book, Neither Predator Nor Prey. And Mark, could you tell people where they can order the book?
Right. The best bet would be to get on my website, which is www.neitherpredatornorprey.com. All lowercase now. www.neitherpredatornorprey.com.
We're talking about, you know, things really going bad in America through the economy and through government actions. But what would you recommend people do so we can avoid this catastrophe?
Well, the catastrophe at the national level, there's nothing you can do. All you can do at this point is try to avoid catastrophe at the local level, and which starts in your own home. You need to have hard assets of some kind. You need to have sufficient guns and ammunition to protect your hard assets. You have to network. You have to have a community network of like-minded people who are willing to at least maintain some sanity in your town, in your home small community. Because at the national level, there's nothing we can do at this point. That's my opinion. You can only carve out little enclaves of sanity.
Okay, you're saying there's nothing you can do at the national level, but surely millions of Americans could have some type of impact on the national level.
I'm a very optimistic person and a cheerful person, but at the national level, at my level, I can't change anything nationally. All I can do is try to carve out a little enclave of sanity and freedom where I live. And most of the people that I associate with feel the same way. And hopefully Wyoming can remain a bastion of sanity and freedom.
Let me ask you a question that would apply not only to Wyoming, but to everybody else who's listening in the states they live in. You think it's worth the effort to reach out to politicians, your senators, your Congress critters, and ask them or tell them, instruct them, inform them about what you don't like or what you think the consequences will be or what you want them to do or not do?
Well, yes. And the reason for that is for your own peace of mind. You want to work through the system as much as you can. And then if things go not the way you'd like it to, you can at least have the satisfaction knowing I did everything I could working through the system. I think it's more of a peace of mind thing than to expect any real success.
Okay, so someone reaches the point where they say, okay, I've done everything I can to work through the system. Once they've come to that conclusion, what kind of steps should they take from that point forward?
Well, like I said, you try to carve out your own little bastion of sanity and freedom. Like I said, you prepare yourself as best you can at the local level. You have your network at the local level. You establish your friends, and you get them all on the same sheet of music at the local level. And then when things collapse, we're in for some very ugly times in this country. Because you have this huge entitlement class, and I go over this in the book too, huge entitlement class, and they can no longer be entitled for much longer. And when they don't get their entitlements, it's going to be very ugly. The big cities are going to be very ugly places. That's why if you have your own little bastion away from the cities, it won't be nice, but it won't be so bad.
The last Talking to America show we did was with a financial analyst, Robert Meyer, and it's on our website at Talking to America, jpfo.org. And he talked about the things you're talking about and what he sees for America. And it's not pretty. And he believes the government will get desperate. So it'll go just beyond things won't be nice. We'll have a desperate government trying to keep itself afloat. Tell me what kind of feedback you're getting from people all over the country who have read your book.
And I mentioned the main feedback that I've been getting is that you've given us hope, because there's a lot of people that think, but I can't possibly go up against the government. But If you choose not to comply, you're not going up against the government. As I mentioned in the book, with this, what's coming down the road, they're going to be very busy in the big cities. They're not going to have a lot of resources to devote to people who decided not to turn their rifle in. So you'll be dealing with a very small portion of the establishment, a very tiny portion. There'll be very few enforcers trying to enforce against very few resistors, which means the odds aren't anywhere near as bad as what they might appear to be. And the people tell me, you've given us hope. Looking at it that way, I feel that I might have a chance. Resistance isn't futile.
You talk about what's coming down. Would you like to elaborate on what you think is going to be coming down?
Well, see, and I don't know. And hopefully it won't come down. Because they know this, so I'm not giving any secrets away. The power people, the people that want complete control and they want to take your guns, and guns are just part of their agenda, have been very successful in my lifetime, and I'm 64 years old. Your rights are continually whittled away. Your gun rights have been continually whittled away, but they've been whittled away just a little bit at a time. And they control the schools. There's hatred of guns in the schools. There's hatred of guns on the media. There's fewer young people being raised up in the gun culture. So if they were smart, they would continue this for another generation to a generation and a half, and they would win without a struggle. So I don't know this is going to come down, but I suspect they might get greedy and move too soon. And so with any luck, I'll be able to live out my life, and my son will, and not be bothered. But we don't know. So I can't. I'm not predicting when anything's going to come down or when it's going to come down. I don't have that ability.
I don't think it'll just be greed. I think their arrogance may be their downfall, because they'll make some faulty decisions. But you touched on something that's kind of interesting. What do you suppose gun owners can do to reach out to their own children so that they become part of the gun culture?
They have to raise them into the culture. I know I certainly did. When my children were 6 years old, they started shooting. And if you look at children who shoot, and I've worked, well, I haven't worked personally with juniors, but we have a junior program in our association. And the junior shooters are your most disciplined, best behaved, most responsible children. And you're actually doing them a great favor, because this is a very important part of their education. And, you know, you need to inculcate this into your children. This is critical. Otherwise, you know, then we die, it dies. So every gun owner has an obligation to perpetuate the culture.
I think you're right. And I think by perpetuating the culture, as you put it, we're also helping the kids understand world history and what's happened to so many people who have not been able to defend their lives because of gun control schemes.
Exactly.
By the way, if people want to know more about this, you know, JPFO has a film called Innocence Betrayed. It shows the eight major genocides and their full gruesome appearance, and also a book, Death by Gun Control. Mark, we're at a point to where I think I'm going to ask you to tell people again where they can get your book and what it costs and all that good stuff.
The book is $20 postpaid, and the website, which has all the ordering information, is www.neitherpredatornorprey.com, all lowercase. And I ship as soon as I get the order. I've had 70 or 80 feedbacks, and nobody told me they got ripped off. So I've been getting very good feedback. You will benefit from reading this book.
Okay, why don't you take a minute and wrap up, and just if there's something you want to share with people so they'll have a message they can take away from what we've talked about today.
The message is that you, as a person, were born with free will. You make the decisions that are important in your lives and in your family's lives and in your community's life. Because evil people a long ways away who sit in positions of power tell you you have to do something, that in itself imposes no obligation on you. You know, you need to be a good person, you need to be civically responsible, but you need to do the right thing. And you need to be able to, and if you don't stick up for your rights, history is, you know, thousands of years of people who didn't stick up for their rights, very bad things happen to them. And people who stuck up for their rights, maybe bad things happened to them, but at least they went out with some respect and honor and dignity.
Very good. Very good. Well, Mark, I want to thank you very much.
Thank you,
Aaron, for being our guest. This has been Talking to America. Our special guest has been Mark Spungen. He's the author of Neither Predator Nor Prey. I'm your host, Aaron Zellman. And please remember, if you won't defend your rights, don't complain when you lose them.
Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of JPFO.org or its members. Talkin' to America is a production of JPFO.org.